sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
On today's show, you're going to hear a speech given by Dr. David Ray Griffin in Seattle after the 9/11 Commission report came out. Dr. David Ray Griffin has written over 10 books on 9/11, one of them being the 9/11 Commission report, Omissions and Distortions. On today's show, you'll hear some of those omissions and distortions. Dr. David Ray Griffin is a retired professor. He worked at Claremont School of Theology for 31 years as a professor of philosophy of religion and theology, and he's authored or edited over 25 books. If you're new to the 9/11 truth movement or want to know what the real evidence is of what really happened on 9/11, a good place to start would be to read Dr. David Ray Griffin's books on 9/11, starting with The New Pearl Harbor and The New Pearl Harbor Revisited. As many of the listeners may know, Dr. David Ray Griffin has spoken several times in Connecticut on his 9/11 research. He's working on a new book, which should be out sometime in 2017. So let's begin. The speech you're about to hear is called Truth in Politics. And here he is, Dr. David Ray Griffin.
With regard to our topic today, Truth in Politics, some people may wonder, people maybe outside this room, but is there anything in the 9/11 Commission report that is untrue? And now that I've finished the book, my big question is, can I find a true sentence in the book? That may sound extreme, but if you don't take it too literally, and if you realize a sentence is a part of a paragraph, which is a part of the argument, then it is hard to find any truth there. And so what I'm going to do this afternoon is just go through and give you some examples. One thing to understand about the report is that, you know, we quite often name commissions after the leader. So we had the Rumsfeld Commission on the space program, so on. So quite often this is called the Kane Commission, but it should be called the Kane-Zelikow Commission. Because the executive director is Philip Zelikow. He was a member of the Bush 1 administration. He got to know Condoleezza Rice very well there. They both served on the National Security Council. When they were between administrations during the Clinton years, they wrote a book together. When the Bush 2 administration was coming into power, she brought him on to help with the transition. And then he was appointed to the Foreign Advisory Board. So he is essentially a member of the Bush White House. And yet, as executive director, he ran the commission. He had a staff of 70-some. He assigned them which topics were worth looking into and which ones were not. He assigned when people would come and say, I want to testify to the commission, I have something important to say. He would decide who would take that testimony, and so on. Let me give you an example, just one tiny example of how important that is. There's a new book out by Peter Lance called Cover Up. And Peter, good patriot that he is, went to testify because he had some important information about Ramzi Youssef. Remember the mastermind of the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center. He was also the mastermind of the Bojinka project that they discovered in Manila. And he also was the one who came up with the planes idea of using planes for weapons. So he is the mastermind. Peter went to give testimony. And his testimony was going to contradict some of the things that showed up that were in the prosecution's case in 1996 when they prosecuted Ramzi Youssef. Who took Peter Lance's testimony? Dietrich Schnell, one of the two prosecutors of that event, of that trial. So that is an example of how the executive director could skew. And Peter said he got a mole inside the commission, somebody who was very unhappy on the staff, who was unhappy with the way things were going. And they would meet, and he would tell Peter what was going on. And he said that Zelikow just runs the whole commission, that there are these leadership teams, and 6 out of the 7 teams, he said, are completely controlled by Zelikow. Only one team, run by John Farmer, was not, and they were butting heads all the time. There are other examples, like at the commission report, people would say, "Tell us about the war games." And they would ask the commissioners, "Why didn't you deal with the war games?" And the commissioners said, "Oh, well, we were told that was unimportant." Well, by whom were they told? So you essentially have the 9/11 commission. It's the White House investigating itself. And furthermore, as Peter points out, the staff, you know, you think, oh, well, they got a staff there. It's a bunch of people who know how to do research. They probably got, you know, university students and so on. No. Ex-FBI, ex-CIA, ex-Department of Justice, 9 members from the Department of Justice. Ashcroft, yeah. So they've got their friends back on there. So when you wonder, why are no names named? Got people on there protecting their friends, protecting their institutions that they're still proud of, or they want to be have the public to have a good point. So from the very beginning, this was a doomed commission. It was not a commission to get the truth. Once you realize that, these things won't shock you quite as much. But even then, even knowing that, I was still shocked at the number of omissions and the audacity of some of the distortions. So let me go through some of these. Starting right out on the very first pages, they start telling you about the hijackers. What they don't tell you, and they give you the names, and in the middle of the book you can see their pictures. What they don't tell you is that at least six of those men are still alive. Some of them have, like Walid al-Shira, walked into the embassy and said, "Here I am, I'm not dead." And some of them were interviewed by the BBC and London newspapers. And nevertheless, they're in there. And this Walid al-Shira, they have him on flight 11. And they say, "We believe he's one of the ones who stabbed some of the people who were stabbed." Just a total disregard of well-known facts. Just omit that there's any problem with the identity of the hijackers. Likewise, they fail to mention, Daniel Hofstetter has written a whole book about Muhammad Atta, shown he was not a devout Muslim. You know, the image we have, here are these radical fundamentalist Muslims, they're ready to meet their maker. Atta loved alcohol, pork, and prostitutes. And the commission says, we're puzzled, why did these guys go to Las Vegas? We've not found any credible reason. Well, they loved lap dances, you know. Another hijacker, alleged hijacker, is Hani Hanjour. And they tell us he was chosen to fly Flight 77, the one that was going to hit the Pentagon, because he was their best pilot. Hani Hanjour could not fly any kind of airplane. He would go up in his lessons, and the next time the guy wouldn't go up with him. He says, "You can't fly." He was known as a horrible pilot, even with a little plane, and yet he was alleged to fly this Boeing 757 and make this amazing spiral, come down and come in at ground level, 400 miles an hour, into the Pentagon. The best pilots in the world, some of them have looked at that and said, "I don't think I could do that." Hani Hanjour could not fly. This one they do mention. It's a funny thing. They mention this and then they just ignore it. And they have President Bush and Mays, you know, boy, this was some pilot, you know. The flight manifest. We've never publicly seen flight manifests that show that any of the... So it's not just the 6. We don't know that any of the 19 men named were actually on these flights. None of this is mentioned. It's not mentioned and refuted. It's just not mentioned. So that's why I call it omissions. And some people call it the 9/11 Omission Commission. Let me give another example. World Trade Center. They hardly discuss the question of these enormous buildings coming down. They don't discuss any of the problems. One problem is, never before in history have steel-framed high-rise buildings collapsed because of fire. Now, some people say, well, I'm just fire these big planes hit them. Well, people who've looked at this said that's insignificant. Besides, no plane hit building number 7, which is a 47-story skyscraper. And it came down also. Furthermore, even if you were going to have fire weaken a building, it would have to be enormous fires. They would have to be very hot, not ordinary hydrocarbon fires that you get from kerosene, which is what jet fuel is. And they would have to be very long-lasting. These fires didn't last. The South Tower came down 57 minutes. There's an enormous amount of steel in a 110-story building that is steel-framed inside and outside. And yet they're telling us these. Now, the only thing they mention here, they mention that South Tower collapsed in 10 seconds. Can you imagine how fire would bring down a 110-story building in free fall speed? And that's what it is. Also, the wrong tower collapsed first. The North Tower was hit first. And so if it's fire that's bringing it down, it takes a while for the fire to heat up the steel. The North Tower should have collapsed first. The South Tower also had a much smaller fire because the plane hit it at the angle, at the corner, and so most of the fuel went outside and burned up. So that enormous fireball you see, you say, boy, what an enormous fire. Well, yeah, for about 15 seconds. And it's burned up, and so there's not much fuel to keep the fire going in the South Tower. And yet, it collapses within 57 minutes. One of the places where you just know they're absolutely lying and cheating is they give you an account that makes it sound plausible that these towers could have come down. They tell you that in the core of each building was a hollow shaft that was just filled with elevators and staircases. Yeah, and 47 massive steel columns. That's what the World Trade, these buildings were all about. This was this unique structure at the time. These 47 massive steel things going up into the air. So massive at the bottom. So even if you accepted the official theory, which is a pancake theory, that somehow the connectors between the columns in the middle and then the peripheral beams around the building, somehow those snapped and then the floors came down and that floor was so heavy it hit the net and it just went down. Can you imagine that happening in 10 seconds? And even if it did, just like if in the old records, when the records fell on the spindle, and those of you who are old enough to remember those, the spindle's still there. So why aren't those 47 towers still sticking up in the air? But the pictures show they totally collapse. You have something that's no more than 3 stories high. I mean, just total dishonesty to deny the existence of those massive columns. And then they don't even mention that building number 7 collapsed. There's not a word about it. Everybody admits there is no explanation for why building number 7 collapsed. In most cities, this would have been the biggest building, 47 stories high. It can be ignored only because it was next to the towers. And FEMA says, they come up with this lame explanation of how this building came down. They said, the only explanation we can come up with has a very low probability of occurrence. No. But there's no answer. So they, rather than telling you, like an honest report would, we're surprised, we're puzzled why building number 7 collapsed. There's no good answer. They just don't even mention that it collapsed. They don't tell you that Larry Silverstein, the owner virtually of the building and the builder of it, said on a PBS report, well, at a certain point, the fire chief and I got together and we said, you know, there's been so much loss of life, let's not take any chances, and we decided to pull it.
The smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull.
Pull it is the slang for bringing it down by controlled demolition. So he admits it in public. It's well known. It's mentioned in any, like my book and other books and all the books that people sent to the commission, assuming they wanted to know the truth. And they don't mention, they don't bring in Larry Silverstein and say, why did you say that? What did you mean by that? Isn't that what a commission looking for the truth might do? Likewise, Giuliani said, we knew that the towers were going to collapse, so we got the people out of building number 7. How did he know the tower? Buildings have never collapsed before in history. How could have he known the Twin Towers were going to collapse? They didn't ask him that. They treated him as a hero when he comes into the commission. They fell all over themselves praising Rudy Giuliani as the great hero. So what I'm getting at here, those of you who haven't read it, is that all three collapses were pretty close to classic examples of what they call controlled demolition. When dynamite or some kind of explosives are placed throughout the building at all the crucial points, and then they put them on a computer and they bring them down in certain order, and therefore the building comes straight down so it doesn't fall on these other buildings, and they come down in virtually free fall speed. And that's what happened here. All three buildings. You can see them on all sorts of places on the website. You don't see them on TV anymore. They showed them the first night, and Dan Rather, you know, bless his soul, comes right out and blurts out the truth. He says, "Boy, that looks just like controlled demolition." The 9/11 Commission also does not tell you that Marvin Bush, the president's brother, and their cousin, Ward Walker, were the principals of the company that was in charge of security for the World Trade Center. They don't, All sorts of coincidences here. They also don't tell you that there were many reports of people who worked in the building saying, you know, we got a shutdown order, so for 3 days we couldn't go in the World Trade Center. There were engineers coming in and out. We didn't know it. Okay, moving right along to the Pentagon. They don't tell you that. They do mention that it was the west wing of the Pentagon that was hit. They don't mention that for terrorists who wanted to really strike a blow at the Pentagon, the west wing was the least likely part to hit. Why? Because all the big brass are in the east wing. That's where Rumsfeld and all the top generals are. Furthermore, the west wing was being renovated. So it was reinforced so the fire wouldn't spread to the rest of the building. Also, there were very few people there. And so, although it's tragic that 125 people on the ground were killed, several thousand would have been killed if the plane had hit any other... Well, if it had been a plane, we'll come to that later. But even what it was, it would have killed several hundred and maybe thousand if it had been an ordinary place. And also, terrorists would want to kill Pentagon workers. Most of the people killed were civilians who were there working on their renovation. Furthermore, as I said, it was the hardest place of the Pentagon to hit. You've got this huge Pentagon here with acres. All you had to do was fly right into the ceiling, right into the roof, and you would have done it. You couldn't have missed. Even Hani Hanjour could have hit it. And all you had to do was hit the East Wing. And, you know, remember how smart these terrorists were? These were masterminds. And yet they didn't know that the West Wing wasn't where you would want to hit. Why don't they just release the videos and show us? You know, there are cameras there, cameras on hotels next door. There's a camera in the gas station across the street. All you have to do is show us the videos and you can prove it was a Boeing 757. No, they didn't show us any. They finally, after Thierry Masson came out with his theory that it wasn't a Boeing but a missile, they released five frames that they said proved it. Some people have looked at those frames and said, that's when I became a skeptic, because that was not a Boeing, even though they tried to make it look like it. Furthermore, this video that was across the street, within 5 minutes of the attack, the FBI was over there and confiscated it. You would think the FBI would be distraught. Hey, for the first time in history, the Pentagon has been hit. No, they had the presence of mind to get in their cars and drive over there and confiscate the video. We've never seen it. 9/11 Commission, of course, doesn't mention any of this. How could a Boeing, a commercial airliner, attack the Pentagon? Wouldn't you have batteries of missiles surrounding the Pentagon so that any airplane that doesn't have a military transponder radiate friendly, would be shot down? Of course, that's exactly the situation. And yet, whatever it was that hit the Pentagon goes right through. Batteries are not operating. Then, one of the most dishonest things in the commission report is they actually bring this up. Because one of the criticisms have been, these flights that were going to New York, they passed by one of the biggest nuclear plants right along the river there. All they had to do was attack that. That would have caused far more devastation than any of these attacks on the World Trade Center. It would have, killed hundreds of thousands of people, poisoned the area, ruined the economy of the United States, if that's what these terrorists wanted to do, because they hate freedom and democracy. But they didn't. They flew right over it and went and hit the World Trade Center. So what does the 9/11 Commission tell you? Well, they have this guy named, they call him KSM, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. And they've captured him, they tell us. Well, he's this font of information. And they just say anything they want to, and they say, this is what KSM told us. We have no way of checking this. They just tell us, he was the mastermind. So what he told him was, well, yeah, we thought about hitting a nuclear plant, but, we said, they're probably guarded. They probably have missiles around there. We'd probably get shot down. So let's go hit the Pentagon. It's surely... And I hate to say it, I'm not making this up. So when you hear that this report is the number one bestseller of the year, and also you go on Amazon and look at the reports, the ratings, customer ratings, at least the last time I looked, 9 out of 10 were 5 stars. People are saying, now we know the truth. And yet, this is comic book stuff. When you know what the truth is, you know all these other reports that they've ignored. It's almost comic book writing. No, that's not true. This is true. How do we know it? Well, because KSM told us, or because we have this transcript. But of course, it will be put in the vault for 50 years, and you'll never be able to see it. With the Warren Commission, they published all the supporting documents. Whatever you can say about the Warren Commission, you can say a lot about the Warren Commission. And Max Clayland said, I'm not going to be part of another Warren Commission cover-up. And he wasn't. The president got him a job, another job. And so you got Max Clayland off the commission, and so you got a unified report. They're very proud. We published this without dissent. They just give you all these reports, and yet they in the notes in the back, and these are authoritative, and yet there's nothing that you can go to check these reports because they're in the hands of the FBI or they're in the hands of other people. You can't check out anything they say, unlike the Warren Commission. At least you could see the testimony. Okay, President Bush on 9/11. You would think... we've seen these movies about the Secret Service. These guys are really highly trained. And if there's the slightest danger to the president, they get in front of him. If there's the slightest danger that this route is not good, you change the route, and so on and so on. Here's the president down in Sarasota in the classroom. And, of course, a lot of you have seen that in the Michael Moore movie. And he sits there, and he sits there, and he sits there after they've told him about the second tower. After the first tower was hit, he says, oh boy, what a horrible accident. So they just go on like, oh, this is a little plane and it flew in. But after the second one, there could be no doubt, but America was under a terrorist attack. I mean, given the official story, could be no doubt about that. So why didn't the Secret Service whisk him out of there? Because if these were terrorists and they wanted to attack the symbols of America, what better target than the President of the United States? If Osama bin Laden... I started to say I'm not trying to put ideas in your mind, and I see I don't have to. Yeah. So the Secret Service would have immediately said, we're next. We're going to be targeted next. They're there in an empty school. There's no fighter cover over. The president is completely unprotected. So the 9/11 Commission said, well, we asked the Secret Service, why did you let the president stay there another half hour? And they said, well, we thought it would look bad if we got up and ran out of the room. Yeah, well, it would look bad if the President of the United States got murdered on your watch because you didn't do your job, too. But they accepted that. And like the only alternatives were get him up and rush him out of the room, like Cheney said they did to him. Could it be that they think Cheney's more important than Bush? No. Let's not go there. That story about Cheney is probably apocryphal anyway. So, but that's what the Secret Service is supposed to do when there's a real danger. And yet, there was no sign of danger. So they said, well, we didn't want to rush him out of the room. So they left him there for 30 minutes. How about something in between, like, excuse us, the president must leave. He's been called to other duties. And you walk out of the room. So the commission didn't press them on that. They just accepted that answer. And time again, I use that as an illustration, they accept the most, really the silliest answers from these authoritative figures. And very seldom do they press. And the few times they do press, it gets deleted from the final report. And that's the other thing to know about Zelikow. He was the editor. He was in charge of the final report. And so it's pretty consistent. I've only found two or three inconsistencies in the parts of the book that I've read. So it clearly had to be finally one mind who was in charge of this. And he's my candidate.
And again, you were just listening to the first part of a speech called Truth in Politics, given by Dr. David Ray Griffin in Seattle after the 9/11 Commission report was first published. Tune in next week to hear the second and final part of this speech. And now I want to tell you about the next film in our Progressive Movie Night series. On June 21st, we'll be showing the film Decade of Deception, which is a video on some of the key speeches and evidence from the 2011 Toronto hearings on 9/11. So again, that's June 21st at 7 p.m. in the Auerbach Auditorium in Hillier Hall on the campus of the University of Hartford. And just a reminder that 9/11 Wake Up Call shows are archived at the website radioforall.net. And that's the digit four, so radioforall.net. Once on the site, search under my name, Cheryl, with a C. It's on page 3 of the C's, and the show should pop up in chronological order. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.